Blog Talk Radio.
Now, the music has faded out. I'm very sorry that you had to listen to that again, but has a bit of a silver lining in Penn State basketball. Finally won a game in the Big Ten, so I finally get to do this. All right. Welcome to this edition of the BSD Basket Bro Show. I'm your host, Bill DeFilippo. Today on the pod, we are going to talk about the Nittany Lions' two games this past week. The 66-60 loss over Sparty in East Lansing. We're going to get into how Penn State was able to keep that close and whether or not Pat Chambers has some beef with Big Ten officiating, because after the game, that was about as angry as I've ever heard him. Then we're going to get into the game against Rutgers, the near 30-point win. That one's going to be a lot of fun to talk about. We'll give you talk a little bit about Brandon Taylor's injury, and then we're going to dive into this week's slate of games at home against Minnesota, and then on the road against Illinois. I'm not doing this all by myself. I am joined, per usual, by Chad Markulis. Chad, what's going on, man?
Sunshine and rainbows, Bill. Sunshine and rainbows.
Yes. That is also especially facetious because Chad and I both live in the state of Pennsylvania, and we are both probably going to freeze to death sometime in the next 36 hours. Also joined
all
today, all good, because at least we're going out and seeing a Penn State basketball win, so it can't be that bad. Also joined today by Tim Aiden. Tim, what's going on, man? It's been a while since we heard from you.
Yeah, it has. A whole lot of nothing's happened in between the last time I go on the podcast, unless you count that six-game losing streak as something. But unlike you guys, it's not quite as freezing down here in the D.C. area, but nonetheless, we're still anticipating some snow and potential closing of work buildings tomorrow.
Yeah, I think everyone's kind of banking on, at least in this area, Tuesday being a day off. But yeah, let's jump right into it. Penn State's first game of this past week was against Michigan State at the Breslin Center. The Nittany Lions went down to Sparty 66-60. There was a bit of controversy involving the game. Pat Chambers was very, very animated afterwards talking about kind of the ways that Penn State doesn't get any calls. And when there are calls called in games involving Penn State, they go against the Nittany Lions. We'll get to that in a second. But, Tim, we're going to start with you. I was unable to watch this game. What was your big takeaway from the Nittany Lions 6-point loss?
My biggest takeaway was, once again, it's just you got up to a slow start on the road, which you absolutely can't do at a place like East Lansing, no matter how down Sparty may be this year. To be honest, I watched like bits and pieces of this game. I was a little too disgusted with the performance to watch the whole way through. But, I did check periodically. And, when we started to make it interesting again towards halftime, I kept my attention the whole way. But, once again, it was D.J. Newble, carrying a team on his shoulders. Got a little help from Brandon Taylor, Shep Garner, but, it wasn't enough. We just need those consistent second and third scores. And also, they just got flat-out abused on the boards. That was probably the most frustrating part to watch. Yeah, I'm looking at the stats here. Michigan State had twice as many offensive rebounds as we did. They, 16-8. I mean, you're not going to win too many games when you're giving up a 2-1 offensive rebounding margin to the opponent.
Yeah. Yeah. Chad, I kind of want to ask you the same question. For not seeing the game, it seemed like it was much, much closer than I know you or I thought it was going to be. Was that the case, or is this one of those games where the final score wasn't indicative of how big of a win it was for Michigan State or how close of a loss it was for Penn State?
Yeah, it was a closer game than we all thought it would be. It was almost down the wire. But you never really thought that Michigan State was going to lose that game at home. Tom Izzo is their coach. He's one of the best coaches of all time in college basketball. He drills into his guys what they need to do to win. And like Tim said, they dominated the offensive glass. That's been their calling card over the years, is just get rebounds and create those second opportunities for themselves. And in the end, that's what won them the game. Didn't really have a go-to scorer. This year they don't really have that guy who can get them buckets, in and out every possession. But, they got a good team effort from guys like Travis Trice. Gavin Stilling had a nice performance. Matt Cross. So, really, it was just, it was kind of the story of the season again for Penn State. Just almost getting to that finish line, not quite. At least the story of the season in Big Ten play thus far. DJ Newbold did his thing as usual, 27 points on 22 shots. Saw some signs of life from Brandon Taylor, hit three threes in the first half, but after that didn't really show up and contribute much in the second. Not a bad performance for Penn State, all things considered, because, going into the season, even if you would have said Penn State's going to lose this game by 6 points, would you take that? You'd probably say yes. So, all in all things considered, not a terrible performance, but just frustrating the way it panned out down the stretch when they had Sparty wasn't playing that well and they had a chance to maybe pull the upset on the road.
Yeah. That's kind of the one thing that really jumped out to me as I'm looking through things right here. Penn State had two players in double digits. Sparty had five, and nearly had a sixth with Brian Forbes, who I've never heard of before right now. And that balance is kind of something that we always talk about, how DJ Newbill needs that second guy to step up. And while 10 for 22 was hardly an efficient night, 27 points, that's what he needed to do, and he went out and he did it. So give him a lot of credit for that. And one other person I really want to give a lot of credit to, I'm going to come back to you after I throw this out there, Chad, Devin Foster. I don't want to say an afterthought, but coming into this season, there were a fair amount of people who thought he was going to get some run, but Shep Gardner was just so good at the start of the year that he took basically all the time at point guard, with Foster getting some garbage time every now and then. Now, due to Gardner struggling a little bit, there's no other, the other guard off the bench is Geno Thorpe. He started the game. John Johnson's out. It's just Penn State needs that extra guard who can come off the bench and give guys a blow. And Devin Foster really shocked us all by doing that. 22 minutes, I apologize. 6 points, five rebounds, two assists, one steal, two for two shooting. Chad, what was Devin Foster doing so well?
He plays with a lot of patience and kind of a cool collectiveness that a lot of Penn State players don't really have. I haven't played with this year. He's a JUCO kid, so he's older, if not more experienced, but. I think he showed a lot of maturity in the way he played with the ball. Hasn't turned it over in the Michigan State game. Play with that maturity that you don't really see from Shep Garney, obviously a freshman. Geno Thorpe at times has a tendency to play a little out of control. And Foster's kind of that crafty lefty. He made some circus shots that game against Michigan State. And I think one of them was actually number three play on the top 10 plays in SportsCenter. So that was kind of cool to see that in a losing effort. But, he can give you those minutes at the point guard backing up Shep. I think the reason he wasn't playing a lot this year is because I think Chamberlain said before that he has, some issues on with grasping the defense that Chambers wants to play. So, and even sometimes you could see him pull him over after a play or after a little foul was called. Whenever Chambers had a little downtime to bring somebody over and talk to him, he did. Dead ball situation. So, there's still some progress to be made for Devin Foster, but I think he's rounding into a player that Penn State can kind of depend on to get get some good minutes off the bench and play some good minutes at the point. So, you know, he's a piece for going in the rest of this year. If John Johnson doesn't come back, and then next year he could see maybe a possibly more defined role as, if not the backup point guard, at least a guard who can give you 20 solid minutes a night. So, nice to see. Another, it's probably the biggest personnel takeaway from that game.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when we're talking about Devin Foster, we're talking about a guy who, and I'm just looking at his GoPSU page right now. He played with Adrian Payne of Michigan State, formerly of Michigan State, now with the Atlanta Hawks in high school. 33-4 at the point as a freshman, led him to a 34-3 in third place as a sophomore, his junior college, Vincennes, I believe that's how you say that. He was a second-team All-American. He came in as a guy who was not used to playing at the Division I level, which is the same as, you know, Shep Gardner and all the other various freshmen that come into college basketball, but he does have some experience playing against people who are in high schoolers, and he's played in, relatively speaking, some big games. So this could, maybe this helps Penn State out somewhere down the line, and as we kind of saw, he can ball, man. I mean, he is such a good, at least this is the thing that jumped out to me, his understanding of the point guard position and not his understanding of not forcing things and knowing that it's not necessarily do everything really well. It's just don't do anything badly and don't do anything dumb and don't make any stupid mistakes is something that I think is a real asset and is going to be a real asset going forward this year and possibly next year. Tim, do you have any thoughts on Devin Foster and his performance and maybe what we should expect from him going forward?
I mean, I gave him my full thoughts. It probably, you know, parallel Chad's. But just on the last part of going forward, I would fully expect to see more of him, you know, more of him spelling time for Shep. Although Shep will continue to be the man at the point. I mean, let's make no mistake about that. But it's good. It's good to see Foster has stepped up, especially in the wake of John Johnson not being in the rotation anymore. It's good to see him step up and show some poise, handling the ball and, you know, making shots, grabbing rebounds. Just seems like an all-out scrappy kid. I know I'm just speaking
you're
generic
bullshit right term.
Yeah, pretty much. Hashtag analysis.
Yeah, Chandler said today that they were planning on using some three-guard looks with Foster, Garner, and Newbill at the same time. So that's kind of interesting and maybe a new wrinkle of what we'll see down the road here. So something to watch out for there.
Yeah, kind of one last thing that I want to talk about. And, Chad, I'll just have you touch on this in a minute or less.
Okay.
Looking at the box score right now, Jordan Dickerson played 9 minutes, Donovan Jack 12, Julian Moore 6. Do you think that was more something that we could see going forward, or was that just one of those things where Michigan State, I think their tallest starter is like 6'7 or 6'8, and Pat was playing the matchup?
That's part of it. They were also in foul trouble for most of the night. Donovan Jack only had 2 fouls, it looks like here, but I don't know. I felt like he had more. But anyways, yeah, you know, they did play small ball a lot. Ross Travis had 30 minutes that night. And Devin Foster ended up more than the lion's share of minutes at the point. So it was funny because Gavin Schilling was kind of beating them up in five all night, and yet they didn't really have a big man in there for a lot of the time. So a little strange, but nothing too – I wouldn't count on seeing that a lot more because Donovan Jack's kind of turning the corner a little bit, it feels like. And Jordan Dickerson, while he's not blocking as many shots as he has last year, I think he's still an important player for Penn State to have, you know, just to alter some shots. Julian Moore also got career-high minutes against Rutgers after the Michigan State game. So I don't think we're going to see that many short lineups. You know, maybe just playing the matchup, but yeah, I wouldn't count on seeing none of those three centers getting any action. So,
yeah, I'm actually looking at the most frequent lineups over the past five games on KenPom, and very narrowly, Penn State's most used lineup was the starting five that it threw out against Sparty, Shep Gardner, DJ Newbill, Geno Thorpe, Brandon Taylor, and Ross Travis.
Right.
But other than that, basically every other lineup involves Jordan Dickerson, Donovan Jack, and Julian Moore. So just an interesting little thing to take a look at, and maybe it's something we'll see a little more down the road. Talking about foul troubles for the big men, here is your weekly Donovan Jack and Jordan Dickerson fouls called for 40 minutes update. Donovan Jack has a narrow lead with 8.5 fouls called per 40, with Jordan Dickerson right on his heels with 8.3 fouls per 40 minutes. So if you and your friends would like to start gambling on this, because I know, if you're dedicating an hour a week to listening to three bloggers talk about Penn State basketball, you're probably a degenerate to some extent. Why not take it a step further? Why not gamble on this, and I will give you guys updates every week. So, yeah, there's
paging
that.
Matt to bear.
Taking that, yes. Well, Matt gambles on everything. Like, Matt probably has a bet over who is more likely to stop for 20 minutes on Sunday when my Patriots take on Polak's beloved Seahawks. So, whatever. Matt is terrible.
He's probably gambling on how much cocaine Eric's doing right now while he puts together another 5,000 article for DSP.
Yes. Matt's a horrible person. You should all avoid him at all costs. So that's it really for Sparty. Tim, do you have any final thoughts on this game?
Well, just to get it in there, as someone who watched the movie Three Ninjas countless times as a kid, I got a kick out of the fact that Michigan State had a player, Lou Rawls Nairn Jr. is his name. But his nickname was Tum-Tum.
His first name is Lou Rawls?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
Lou
amazing.
Rawls.
I wish I could.
But let's him finish. Go ahead, Tim.
I mean, yeah, Lou Rawls by itself is a badass name, but the fact he's nicknamed, you know, Tum-Tum after one of the three ninjas is made for, a lot of fun making fun of that on Twitter.
Why would you ever go by a nickname when your name is Lou Rawls, though? That's awesome. he's named after NLD.
Yeah,
Vitale.
You don't really need another nickname if your name
Dick
is already
Vitale,
Lou.
You know, Dick Vitale's been like harping on all you. Like, every time he's watching the Michigan State game, oh, Lou Rawls, baby, Lou Rawls. That apparently Lou Rawls is the name of some
2006. Lou Rawls. Oh,
yeah. Lou Rawls is the name of some crooner from I don't know, 60s or 70s or something. And of course, Dick Vitale loves that. Eats that shit up. But it is a sweet name. I give him that. So, anyways, yeah, that was my final thoughts on Sparty.
Yes, I'm so upset that I'm just learning now that there is a human being whose first name is Lou Rawls. That's amazing.
Yeah,
Frank Sinatra once said that Rawls had the classiest singing and silkiest chops in the singing game. So,
there you go.
That's straight off of Wikipedia for y'all. So that's it for Sparty. We're done talking about losses. Let's get back to talking about wins, because I missed that from the earlier part of the season.
I like wins.
Penn State, we all like wins. I think I was at the game up in press row, and I tweeted something along the lines of, it's fun when Penn State is good at basketball. And, I forgot what that feeling was like, but a good way to remind everyone what it's like to be good at basketball is to go out on your home court and down a conference opponent, 79-51, which is what the Nittany Lions did when they hosted Rutgers in the Bryce Jordan Center in front of a pitiful 8,281 people. Penn State, it was fun. It was so much fun to see this. Per usual, DJ Newbill led the way, 23 points on an incredibly efficient 8-12 shooting, also had 4 rebounds and 3 assists. Brandon Taylor and Shep Gardner also were in double digits. Taylor had 16 with 6 rebounds and 4 assists. Shep Gardner, 13 points, 4 assists. Some other notable performances were Geno Thorpe, 9.5 assists, 3 rebounds. Julian Moore giving 22 very good minutes. That was actually more than Donovan Jack and Jordan Dickerson combined. My man Peyton Banks had 5 points on 7 shots, which was awesome. And then, of course, the most notable, the player of the game, in my opinion, was Mr. Kevin Montminy, who, when he checked in at the end of the game, That was the loudest that I have heard the Bryce Jordan Center this year. It was awesome.
Hoops McGoin.
Hoops McGoin.
Hoops McGoin.
And in case you guys didn't watch, I need to be the person that tells everyone about this. So Montminy, it was one of those things at the end of the game where everybody on the court, including Kevin Montminy, knew that the objective was for Kevin Montminy to score points. So they were basically giving him the ball and clearing out and telling him to take guys one-on-one. So they give the ball to Montminy. He drives to the hoop, gets fouled. He bricks the first free throw. The second free throw, he misses to the left of the rim. Like, it bounces around and goes left. Kevin Montminy ran around the two Rutgers players and the one Penn State player that were on the left side of the lane and grabbed the rebound away from them, and then he threw up a shot and it didn't go in. It was a triumph of the human spirit. I think that's what I'm trying to say here. And if you can find a highlight of it, how the hell you're finding a Kevin Montminy highlight is beyond me, but go watch it immediately because it was awesome. Chad, start with you. What was really the one thing that stuck out about the Nittany Lions win over Rutgers?
They got to relax. After that beatdown of the first half and a few minutes of the second half, they got to kind of coast a little bit. So I'm sure that was really great for their confidence because it was just an utter beatdown of Rutgers, which, thank God. Thank God we did not lose that game. Oh, my God. I would have died inside.
Praise the basketball.
At home to Rutgers. DJ's incredible. Obviously, we knew that. Brandon Taylor had a pretty good game back to what we expected him to have somewhat this year. Gino Thorpe played incredible defense. I'm just, like, going down the roster here right now. Shep had is probably his best game in the Big Ten so far. Ross Travis missed two free throws, but, you know, still doing – he made a jump shot then, so that was nice.
Yeah.
he's going to end up with a higher –
It was beautiful.
He's going to end up with a way higher field goal percentage than a free throw percentage, which is insane. He shot, like, his free throw percentage this year – we need to talk about this like 2 minutes. It's like ridiculous.
Yeah.
His career from the free throw line before the season, he was like a 60-something percent free throw shooter, which, you know, not great. But this year, he is shooting, let me see here.
17.2%.
17.2%. How did that happen?
His free throw percentage
five of 29?
Is lower. His free throw percentage is lower than DJ Newbill's points per game if we round it to 17.2% for the free throw line. Like, I'm just trying to think of different ways to rationalize this because, like, how do you not make more just on accident? Especially because, like you said, he shot 69% from the line this year. Go ahead, Chad.
Nice.
There you go. So how he's not, like... If he's not even bad for the – if he was bad from the free throw line, it would be whatever. But he's awful. And I hope he figures this out by the end of the season because, like, he's currently – it's the numbers keep up for the rest of the year. He's going to shoot 46.3% from the field, 21.4% from three, and 17.2% from the free throw line, which is not what you want out of your guy whose bread and butter is, like, crashing the boards and attacking the rim.
Think about it like this.
So, yeah.
Jordan Dickerson is shooting 35 percentage points more higher than Ross Travis. 35% more of his free throws he's making than Ross Travis.
Jordan Dickerson is shooting 52.9% from the free throw line, which is really bad. And if that's, like, the worst on your team, that makes a lot of sense because that's about where, like, really bad is cut off. And Ross Travis is way worse than it. Julian Moore is awful for the free throw line also. He's shooting 14% for the free throw line.
Well, his free throw motion, his shot's pretty broken. They got to fix that.
Yeah, oh, he
it's not like he takes a lot of jump shots in the game anyway. So that's a little forgettable. Like, Ross he's 6'6". He's a three naturally. And he's shooting 17% from the line. poor Ross.
Ross Travis,
I don't mean to make fun of Ross. I love Ross, but good God. Get it together, man.
Got up. I don't even smoke, and I need a cigarette right now.
Anyways, let's talk about Rutgers. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, back to Rutgers. Tim, any like big takeaways from the game against RU?
Did you say Tim?
Tim, yes.
Oh, sorry, it was couldn't hear very well.
All good.
Any big takeaway? Big takeaways. Well, for one, I was glad to see us not only get the first Big Ten win, but also just do it in a dominating fashion. Because I remember last year when we started 0-6 in the Big Ten as well, I was at the game we won against Nebraska to get our first Big Ten win, and that was painful to watch. I mean, we needed to rally from like an 8-9 point deficit in the second half, and you know, we didn't really take control of the game until John Johnson, of all people, nailed a couple clutch threes in the final minutes, and you know, we just played some good lockdown defense. And but you know, it was a painful game, I remember, but you know, this one though was just, it was like watching all the pent up frustration from coming up, you know, so close yet short in the previous six games, and just taking it all out on Big Ten powerhouse Rutgers.
You know, they beat Wisconsin, so in a way they are a bit of a powerhouse. They
Kaminsky was Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, conceivably speaking, Wisconsin without Frank Kaminsky should still be able to like curb stop Rutgers, but neither here nor there. One thing that, Tim, you did kind of just say, and I'm going to go back to you on this, is Penn State didn't just win. It got style points in this victory. I mean, anytime you win by 28 points, you have to do something right. Important, do you think it was to the team's psyche, to the team as just something they could use as a jumping point for the rest of the season, that they were able to win this game in such convincing fashion?
Well, I mean, aside from shooting lights out, you know, which obviously it's just basketball, so it's not going to happen every single night. But aside from that, though, just great team basketball. Look, you know, they got 18 assists, I believe, at a season high, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, 18 assists. Well, obviously, you know, and I remember just from watching the game too. There's a lot of saw a lot of assists happening, so I guess it makes sense. But there's a lot of great ball movement. You know, and especially on the defense side of the ball, they were just all over, you know, Rutgers' passing lanes. Like, I mean, it seemed like there were several straight possessions where they either got a steal and an easy layup on the fast break, or they, you know, disrupted the rhythm of Rutgers' offense. But they were just, you know, they're just swarming defense and just great ball movement offensively, and you know, it led to a very complete game.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Chad, kind of the same question for you. How important was it for Penn State to pick up some style points and root to this win?
Really important, just to get, you know, get that confidence back that they had in non-conference play. You know, nice to get some of the other guys involved. Julian Moore had, you know, career-high 22 minutes. Devin Foster had another game where he played a bunch. You know, they just got everybody involved, and everybody had, you know, everybody who played, 10 people who played scored that game. So, is it 10? I can't count. Yeah, 9, whatever. Yeah, you know, just nice to be able to relax in the second half a little bit. Like Tim said, great ball movement, probably the best we've seen all year. You know, controlled the glass against Rutgers, and even though they were out, they were without one of their starting forwards in Junior Itu from a Cameroonian forward, 6'10 or so. Yeah, you know, just nice to see him bounce back after, you know, crushing defeat after crushing defeat like that. And hopefully they can take it into the rest of the Big Ten play, because they're going to need to dig deep to really make a push for at least an NIT bid. So, yeah, nice to get a little relaxation in the second half there.
Yeah, it's kind of off of the NIT bid thing. I think the importance of winning this game with style is 100%. What's the word I'm looking for? It's 100% dependent on what you think this team is going to do for the rest of the season, or what it can do for the rest of the season. So if you think the season's basically over and Penn State's just going to win to the finish line and, you know, at best make the CBI, and even that they may turn it down, then this really didn't mean anything. But I think Penn State still has the potential, especially with its next string of two games, to maybe do something so that when it goes into the Big Ten tournament, we're thinking, hey, you know what's not crazy? The thought of making the NIT. So I think that was really important. And maybe the most important thing for me was that Geno Thorpe and DJ Newville and Shep Garner and whoever was guarding Miles Mack played fantastic on that end of the court. Because Miles Mack is quietly one of the best players in the Big Ten. He's one of those guys that doesn't really get the attention that he deserves. But he's a very good guard. He had a horrible shooting night. 3 of 11 from the field, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and just an overall bad night for him. And that's something that's really important, that we're able to see Penn State say, listen, one guy can have a good game, and in this case it was Kadeem Jack, who 8 for 12, 19 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, steal and a block, but one guy isn't going to beat us. You're going to need your entire team to beat us, and we're not going to let that happen. So good on the Nittany Lions for doing that. The final thing that we're going to talk about from this game, and this is something that has some ramifications for the rest of the season, was Brandon Taylor, who it started looking like, not that he was turning a corner, but that he was starting to figure out kind of what was wrong with him during kind of middle point of the year when he basically fell off the edge of the earth, and he had his best game in some time, 16 points on 6 of 10 shooting, 6 rebounds, 4 assists. He ended up going down late in the game with a knee injury, had to get taken out. He was carried off the court by, I think it was Donovan Jack and Peyton Bang, something like that. Got his knee iced during the alma mater. At the end of the game, he was separate from the rest of his team at the very far end. Everyone had their arms around. He was there on crutches with his knee all iced up. Pat Chambers didn't have an update after the game. Has he said anything more recently on what the injury is, Chad?
Yeah, it sounds like it's day-to-day. I guess Pat expects him to play against Minnesota on Wednesday night. So,
but
that's
no,
nice.
No
but,
word
you know,
on
it is a,
yeah. I was going to say no word on, like, he can only give us 20 minutes or so because we don't want him to really add
no,
to
he didn't,
the game.
He,
okay.
No, he didn't specify. He said the doctors expect him to be, you know, good to go. So that's nice to hear. Yeah.
That's good because, I mean, coming up against Minnesota on, let's see, if we're going to be filming this lovely
Wednesday.
Podcast on a Monday and up on Tuesday, so it'll be tomorrow. Penn State, this is a game that Penn State can absolutely win. And Brandon Taylor is very, very important to the Nittany Lions getting the W in this game. So, I mean, Chad, if Brandon Taylor doesn't play, can Penn State win against Minnesota?
I don't think we have to even ask that question because it sounds like he's going to play. But if he didn't for some reason or you aggravated an injury in practice or whatever before the game, it's certainly a blow. And, you know, they're going to need to dig deep to find some points because Minnesota wants to play an up-tempo style. And, you know, Brandon Taylor can kind of slow it down if he can get in the paint and draw some fouls or make some easy buckets, in, you know, near the rim or hit the threes, you know. Anytime you face a team like Minnesota, you want to have all your offensive weapons available. So hopefully it'll be okay, and you can, you know, continue his good form in the Wednesday night's game against Minnesota in a game that Penn State kind of needs to win to get back in the hunt a little bit. So
yeah. Let's kind of use this as a jumping point to discuss Rich Pitino's Golden Gophers. They came into this year with some really high expectations. I mean, people were expecting them to be a team that probably wasn't going to compete for a Big Ten title, but was going to be firmly in the race for part of the year. They're 13-8. They have some pretty big losses on the schedule, lost to Maryland, Ohio State, and Louisville. Have one really, I wouldn't even say really bad losses. They've lost to Nebraska and to Iowa. Purdue, St. John's, they're 2-6 right now, so one game better than Penn State in the Big Ten. Both teams have 13 wins. Minnesota is 13-8. They are led by Andre Hollins, who is averaging 14.5 points a night. Chad, give us a really quick preview of what we should expect from the Golden Gophers?
The Gophers played really fast. That's been their calling card since Rich Pitino took over a couple years ago. They have some great guards. Andre Hollins is a senior. It feels like he's been around forever. He's the leading scorer. Nate Mason's a freshman who's been really impressive so far. Leads the team in offensive rating from anybody who contributes on more than 16% of possessions. DeAndre Matthew is, you know, lightning in the ball at 5'9", 165, but he's so quick, and he's so quick with his hands on defense, too. You know, they have a lot of talent, and I think the one guy that can really harm Penn State, if he can stay on the floor, is Maurice Walker. They're 6'10 center who, is, you know, he's a massive player. He draws 5,000 a night against his defenders, and they're really going to have to key on him, I think, because, you know, if they do slow down, if Penn State does manage to slow Minnesota down, Maurice Walker is that weapon in the half court for Minnesota that can really harm them, even if, you know, they're not playing Minnesota's preferred style. So, you know, it's kind of pick your poison. If you can slow them down, they have the options to beat somebody, but they haven't been able to do that a lot this year, though, in Big Ten play. It started out 0-5, managed to beat Rutgers at home, lost to Nebraska the other week at Pinnacle Bank Arena, Pinnacle Bank Center, whatever it's called, and managed to beat an Illinois team that's probably going to start feeling the effects of losing Ray Rice for the next few games at least. So they're a little bit of a mystery right now, but they have the players and the talent to spring, you know, to get the victory at the Boyce Jordan Center. So Penn State's going to really have to be on their toes for this game.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota, when they came to the Bryce Jordan Center last year, 168-65. Penn State was led in that game by Tim Frazier. DJ Neubel had his worst game of the season by a country mile, 14 minutes, no points, 5 fouls. And kind of what Chad was saying, the Golden Gophers are led by a really fast, really talented, really pesky backcourt. I'm a big fan myself of DeAndre Matthew. When he gets going, he is so fast, so quick. He can score, and he's a menace on defense. Tim, how much of the Gophers have you watched this year, and what are you kind of expecting to happen when they come to the Bryce Jordan Center on Wednesday?
I think the only time I've watched Minnesota was maybe catching a couple minutes of their lone win against Rutgers, their lone Big Ten win. They have two Big Ten wins now, but their first Big Ten win, I should say, against Rutgers. I guess I did watch a little bit of their game at Maryland and their season opener against Louisville. Yeah, with Pitino against Pitino, but
The Pitino Bowl.
I mean, really, just from looking at, you know, stats, it's obviously a winnable game, but at the same time, you know, it seems that teams that can play up tempo and press do give us issues at times. I remember I think USC, they try to play that style with Andy Anfield's system they brought from Florida Gulf Coast. I guess we'll have to see if they're able to, you know, beat the press, if they're able to, you know, keep Matthew and Andre Hollins in check. My biggest concern really is, you know, Maurice Walker, you know, 6'10", all 6'10 of them just abusing us down in the post. That's a spot where everyone's been able to take advantage of Penn State thus far in Big Ten play.
Yes, certainly. Chad, kind of just one thing that I see with Minnesota is they're incredibly good at sharing the ball amongst themselves and taking the ball away from opponents. They are sixth in the country in assists per game and second in steals per game. So I'm going into this game. Is Shep Gardner the most important player for the Nittany Lions? and watching his ability to control the ball and control what happens kind of on both sides of the court?
Yeah, definitely. Play an up-tempo style, and they force a lot of turnovers every night. You know, they're fifth in the country in forcing turnovers, adjusted for tempo. In every game, in most of the games they've lost this year, it's been when they've played an evenly matched foe, it seems, you know, if it's a slower game, they've lost that game. So, if Penn State can control the tempo at home and, you know, force them to play in half court, I think Penn State will have a decent chance to win. But like you said, yeah, Shep Garner, Devin Foster, whoever's handling the ball, you know, they're so important to kind of break down that defense, break down that full court press they play, and just make sure they don't, you know, they hold on to the ball at a decent clip, because they're going to turn the ball over a lot. They're going to be kind of coasting to play in that high tempo style. So if they can just, you know, keep their composure and play more in the half court, and, you know, it's kind of, Penn State does have an offense that's suited to take it to Minnesota the way that for most of the season they haven't really had a lot of assists. That means they're not really, you know, you can give it to DJ Nuba and let him kind of operate one-on-one, which, you know, slows the clock down, slows down the pace of play a little bit, and DJ can work for his own shot. So in that sense, I think Penn State has, you know, opportunity to maybe take the game to them. But, you know, the Gophers have had Penn State's number for a number of years now. They have Penn State hasn't beaten them since Taylor Battles, a senior, in 2011. So they really have to, you know, get over some mental humps probably, too, for this game. You know, Penn State lost to Minnesota three times last year, almost in succession. So, yeah, they have to kind of overcome some demons to maybe pull this one out. I don't really have any question. Minnesota has the horses to do it, so. It should be a good game, I think. It'll be a close one.
Really quickly, I'll start with you, Chad, and then we'll go to you, Tim. Would it be advantageous for Penn State to bust out some of the small ball lineups that we saw against Sparty? Because I'm looking at this, Andre Holland is 6'2", Carlos Morris is 6'5", DeAndre Matthews is 5'9", Nate Mason is 6'1". So not exactly dealing with a team of giants here, really outside of Maurice Walker, who is, like, he kills animals and eats their meat with his bare hands.
I mean, they have, you know, you want as many ball handlers on the floor as possible when you play Minnesota. And if Walker's not out there, you really don't need to match up with them. Because other than him, they have Joey King, who's kind of more perimeter player, but he's 6'9". Elliot Eliason, who only played 31% of the minutes. So, yeah, you know, if they're going to play small, you kind of have to match up with them just to have a good number of ball handlers on the floor. But if Walker's out there and you decide to go small, you really have to hit some outside shots to beat Minnesota. So, hopefully that momentum for the Rutgers game, they shot 7 of 12 in the first half from three-point range, that can continue, because they're going to need to hit some jumpers. They can't – I don't know if they'll be able to penetrate at will like they have not like they have, because they haven't really, but as their offense kind of dictates. So if they can hit some outside shots, I guess I kind of like their chances to at least keep it close and possibly pull out a win. But, Minnesota's got talent, and they've got a game plan that works for them. Despite their record this year, you know, a lot of Minnesota fans are somewhat discontent right now over the conference record. But, they're a really tough opponent to play every night. So, You can't really take any nights off against them.
Yeah, really, we're expecting more out of Minnesota coming into this year. At least I know I was, when a lot of Minnesota fans did as well. Tim, kind of the same question for you. Do you think we're going to be seeing a lot of small ball, a lot of lineups with guys that maybe something like DJ Newbill, Shep Garner, maybe say Ross Travis? If he's back, and we have no idea if he's going to be, John Johnson and a big man, something along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, I think like Chad was saying, probably the best way to combat against a, you know, athletic pressing squad like Minnesota is to, you know, throw your own athletic guards at them, you know, guys who can handle the ball and not get phased by the press. You know, ideally, it would be nice, though, if we had a consistently reliable post player who could you know, kind of make Minnesota pay for their small ball tactics. But, you know, in this case, I think it's – I think we're better off just fighting fire with fire. And, you know, it worked yeah, well, also, even against Sparty, it seemed to work. I mean, we definitely had a chance to, you know, pull out that game in the last few minutes. And, of course, you know, against, you know, Rutgers, we already talked about. I really just hoping they save some of that three-point shooting for Wednesday night because they'll need it.
Certainly. And, of course, it's a Wednesday night game. It's at 7 p.m. It's on the campus of the beautiful Pennsylvania State University. And if you're not snowed in and you're in the area, you know I'm going to say that by now, go to the game. Team's going to need a lot of support, and this could be really big. This could be a big win against a quality opponent, against a team that is talented, against the Nittany Lions. After the game on Wednesday, Penn State then have a couple of days off, but then it travels to lovely Champaign, Illinois, to take on the Illinois Fighting Illini. The Illini this year 67th in KenPom. They are another team with 13 wins. They're 13-8 with a 3-5 record in the Big Ten. Kind of just taking a really quick look at them. They've lost to mostly teams that are generally pretty good. In Miami, Villanova, Oregon, and then in the Big Ten, Michigan, Ohio State, Nebraska, Ball, Indiana, and most recently they lost to Minnesota. So, Chad, again, we'll start with you. The big thing with Illinois this year has been playing without their star, Ravonte Rice. How have they kind of adjusted to playing without one of the best players in the Big Ten who has been out with an injury?
I think they were riding high a little bit on, you know, kind of to borrow Bill Simmons-ism here, a little bit of Ewing theory when –
fired.
When Rice went out. Yeah, I know, sorry. yeah, they do have talent. They have a lot of talent. Kendrick Nunn, if you'll remember from last year, he was the guy who kind of initiated that fight with DJ Newell at Sebby Hall. But he's a really talented player. He's been the guy who's filled that scoring void in the last couple of games. Jalen Tate's coming on as a sophomore. Malcolm Hill, kind of the guy people expected to step in for Ravonte Rice. He's having a good he's making good contributions recently. LaRon Black's a freshman who had a double-double in his first career start. Man, Egwu's been there forever. So, you know, it's another team that has talent, probably more so than Penn State, but they seem to, you know, they're capable of playing a little disjointed, a little hero ball now and then. So, you know, it's always a tough matchup going into Assembly Hall, Illinois Assembly Hall especially. I wouldn't expect Penn State to win this game, but, you know, anything can happen, I guess, when with Rice out. So it'll be interesting, I think, but I would expect Illinois to pull that one out at home.
Yeah, kind of that's really the big thing. When you talk about Illinois, coming into this year, everything that they wanted to do and all the success that they wanted to have was predicated on Ravonte Rice, who is just really an absolutely fantastic basketball player. Unfortunately, he got hurt earlier this month, broken left hand. He's been out ever since then, and since his injury, which was on earlier in January, they are 3-3. Did he get hurt in the game against Maryland, or did he get hurt before that?
I'm trying to think.
I can't remember.
It was in practice. Yeah.
So was it before they took on Maryland? I'm trying to find this right now. He got hurt on January 6th. Got hurt on January
6th. Right,
they played Maryland on January 7th. They beat Maryland without him, so good on him. But 3-3 in that time, beat Maryland, beat Northwestern, beat Purdue, lost to Nebraska, lost to Indiana, lost to Minnesota. So that's kind of just the state of Illinois basketball right now. There's no word on when Rice is going to be coming. Anytime you lose a player who averages 17.2 points, 6.9 rebounds, and shoots at a 50% from the field, almost 50% from three and 80% from the free throw line clip, it's really tough to replace him. Tim, what are kind of your thoughts on John Gross's Illini?
Well, it seems they've managed to, I guess, so far weather the storm, with Ray Rice. They really call him Ray Rice. I mean,
yeah, I feel like that's a big oversight.
I wouldn't call him.
I feel
Ray
kind
Rice.
Of uneasy calling him Ray Rice, But
yeah, I think he goes by Ravonte. I think
without Ravonte Rice, I mean they've done all right. They beat a decent Purdue squad. They played Indiana tough at home. Again, it's a game I'd be surprised if Penn State did pull it out. It's always tough to win on the road in the Big Ten anyway. But granted, we do have a history of shocking the Illini, at their place. Granted, those took place when Bruce Weber was running the show in Champaign.
33-28.
38-33. Now, my favorite was 2006. It was Ed DeChalz's third year and came back from like a double-digit deficit. That was when they had Dee Brown and Roger Powell and those guys. Came back from a double-digit deficit early on, and we won on a last-second putback by Travis Parker off of missed Mike Walker three-pointer.
That was the year before they went undefeated that whole time, right? Obviously, they didn't beat him that year. Yeah.
That was the year after they went undefeated. That was.
It's kind of hard to go undefeated when you lose a basketball game.
I figured it wasn't that year. Yeah, I wasn't sure it was that.
It was one of those things where, halfway through saying it, you realized what was going on. Right.
It was the year after that national championship runner-up run for them. But I just remember watching that. I didn't even watch it. I remember I was in person. I remember ESPN was showing another game, but then they did a little cutting and they showed the clip of Parker's putback. And first I thought, did I have too many Guinnesses? Am I seeing this clearly? Did Penn State just come back from a double deficit to shock a top 10 Illinois team? It happened. So I always think of that when I think of playing Illinois. And just reminds me that anything is possible. But that being said, I would be a little surprised if Penn State was able to pull out the win in Champaign just, due to their inconsistencies.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
This game was a turn of the corner.
Did you just say you watched a basketball game at the first?
Well, no. I didn't go to the first to watch a basketball game.
I'm upset at you for going to the first just in general, but to watch a basketball game, we'd have to have some kind of an intervention with 21-year-old Tim. Understandable. The first is awful, everybody. So looking at this right now, this is – I'm trying to find another stretch on Penn State's schedule of two more winnable games than this. And really, outside of going to Northwestern and playing Iowa, I can't see any two games that would really qualify as games that can be part of a winning streak. This looks like, at least through the rest of the season, the kind of thing where Penn State is going to either alternate wins and losses or lose two or three before getting a win, something like that. So, Tim, how important is it that Penn State, if Penn State wants to do anything after the Big Ten tournament, gets two wins this week?
Well, I think, if you're talking NIT, they definitely – need to go undefeated this week with Minnesota and Illinois. Yeah, I think the magic number right now is 19 wins overall to get a serious look from the IT selection committee.
Yeah,
that would put us at about 7 Big Ten wins.
Yep.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Something, like, I think 7 Big Ten wins is kind of what Penn State needs to shoot for if it wants to make it to the NIT or what, or 6 wins and, you know, magic in the end, Big Ten tournament. But yeah, Chad, kind of the same question to you. How important is this week if Penn State has any tie of postseason aspirations beyond the CBI? And if Penn State got invited to the CBI, would it even, like, would it go? Like, do you really want to go to the CBI 2 years in a row and potentially lose in the CBI 2 years in a row?
I would rather not, and I don't think they would go again after last year's experience. Hopefully they learn from that. And it's just, it's really a no-win situation playing in the CBI. You know, you win it, whoop-de-doo, you beat a bunch of also-rans, and you lose, oh my gosh, you lost to Siena. So,
oh, that
yeah,
was a bad
think,
night.
Yeah, I don't think I don't
I
think
went to that
again.
Game. It was a horrible night.
You poor soul. Why would you do that?
Okay, so I went with 4 or 5 Nittany Nation people, and the four or five of us were louder than the 3,000 Siena fans there. It was it was so weird. And then Penn State played about as bad as you can imagine a football team plays in that situation. But, yeah, continue. Continue.
They stormed the court,
didn't
they?
I'm really sad. They stormed the court. And I don't – like, I've been around a lot of other fan base – a lot of non-Penn State fan bases since everything in November of 2011 went down. No fan base was more abrasive about the whole Sandusky thing than Siena basketball fans.
I heard the same thing, too, from people who were there.
Yeah.
They were just –
yeah. So, no CBI, no thanks. I'm good.
We're Penn State. We don't play in the CBI.
we shoot for the moon and that NIT thing.
Dr. Smart coming, y'all. Anyways. this week, I don't know. 2 wins would be really nice. I'm not expecting that. If they can... they can pull it out against Minnesota and go 1-1 with the loss on the road at Illinois. I'm okay with that. You know, Illinois is you know, despite losing Ray Vontae Rice, they've been playing
don't
pretty
call
well.
Him Ray Rice.
I know we were over it. Ray Vontae Rice. They've been playing pretty well, and you know that kind of underlines like the uphill battle Penn State has in the Big Ten. You know, Illinois can lose their best player by far and Ray Vontae Rice and still go 3-3 over that stretch. And if Penn State lost E.J. Neubel this year, I don't think there's any question they'd win maybe one more game the rest of the year without D.J. So, you know, that's kind of like the talent floor that Pat Chambers has to raise. And, you know, he's starting to do that. But anyway, not to get all preachy or whatever. If they go 1-1 this week, I'll be pretty happy with that.
I think that's fair. And I'm really hoping that happens because I'm still holding on to very slim NIT hopes, and those hopes don't happen if Penn State falls to 1-8. I mean, 2-7 isn't very good. 3-6 is pretty nice, but that's just not happening. And looking through here, KenPom has going 5-13. I would assume, even though he only has 2 more wins on the schedule against KenPom actually has us winning against Minnesota and then has us beating Nebraska ball a little bit later in the year.
That changed this weekend because Penn State flew up 20 spots in KenPom after being Rutgers by 28 points. So.
I noticed that when I was looking at the KenPom page for that game. Like Penn State was at 121 and the Nittany Lions are at 101 right now, which I mean, listen, I think Rutgers has some talent, but not that good of talent. Just like,
Penn State
would have been
like 20 spots too.
Yeah. So I mean, KenPom really likes us sometimes, like really likes us a lot more than some people.
Moral of the story is if you want a game KenPom system, beat Rutgers by a shit ton.
Yeah, I mean, Wisconsin would be like, I don't know if you could be higher than number one, but they would have found a way to do that if they were somehow able to pull out the catastrophe against Rutgers. But, yeah, I'm looking at this right now. I think the best-case scenario for the rest of the year, beat Minnesota, beat Illinois, beat Nebraska ball, take down Ohio State at home, and beat Iowa and Northwestern. But this is like, that's not going to happen. I mean, Penn State needs some help, and the best way to get that help is to help themselves over the next couple of games. And it's certainly possible. It's not going to happen in all likelihood, but it's certainly possible that when we do convene next week, we are a little too excited about Penn State going to Maryland when we really shouldn't be, because Maryland is incredibly good. So I just kind of out of left field, I realized like the other day that when they do the first team All Big Ten of the year, the guards are going to be Melo Trimble of Maryland, just speaking of Maryland, and D'Angelo Russell of Ohio State. And when that happens, will one of you be here to console me?
Yes.
Do
they always go two guards, two forwards? They could put Russell at the three, or Nubo at the three, if they really wanted to. And they
I suppose.
Am I crazy for thinking that Maryland might potentially be like last year's Ohio State to us? As in, we just...
Tim, be quiet. Don't jinx it, please. Just in case it is, let it go. Because I would die of happiness if that was the case. So let's just not talk about
it. I say that because I'm still pondering trying to get tickets to that game, because I live like a half hour.
I think you should go. And just
Maryland is one of those places where I really want to see a basketball game one of these days. So I would absolutely recommend going. It's just, I mean, don't get your hopes up in any way, shape, or form. I'm looking at the All Big Ten teams from last year, and it was both first teams, coaches, and the media were Roy Devin Marble of Iowa, Nick Stauskas of Michigan, Gary Harris of Sparty, Taryn Pettaway from Nebraska, and Frank Kaminsky from Wisconsin.
Four guards in the center. We could be all right there.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully, as long as, you know, Taryn Pettaway doesn't blow up, and neither does Sam Decker. We have hope, and hope is
all right.
See what the quote is. Shawshank, hope. Hope is a dangerous thing, as we all learned from Shawshank. It can drive a man insane. And seeing as how we do a weekly podcast about Penn State basketball, I think has already driven us insane.
We're there.
We're
way beyond.
Yeah, we kind of lost it. There's the other quote. Hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things, and no good thing ever dies. So, what you got to die sometime. We're just going to sit here and be immortal for the rest of the time. Chad, give us any really quick and fun recruiting updates that we could use this week, or is there nothing really happening on that front?
Just a little bit of news. Speaking of Maryland, they just got their first 2016 commit, and Anthony Cowan is a point guard from Washington, D.C. He's probably one of the top three point guard prospects Penn State was looking at, along with Alani Moore and Tony Carr. It was kind of expected he would be a Maryland lean this whole time, and yeah, he just confirmed that. They did offer J.R. Bolden from Philly guard, plays on team final, along with Tony Carr. He's a 6'3 combo guard, so kind of one of the players Penn State's been targeting over the past couple of years, kind of the same mold. Other than that, not a whole lot. 2015 is looking pretty quiet still, so there'll probably be some more movement on that this summer, I would expect, after the season. But until then, it's going to be a little quiet unless you can get one of those 2015 kids or 2016 kids. We could be on I won't say commit watch, but, you know, we might see one of these guards, you know, with Cowan's commitment, you could see some dominoes start to fall with Tony Carr, Lonnie Moore, some of these guys. So just keep your eyes out, as always, but nothing imminent.
So basically we should be looking into the for immediate things that could happen, it's 2016, 2017, and we shouldn't really expect anything coming up in the 2015 class.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything particularly imminent. Levi Cook was the last kind of big man prospect they're looking at. Oh, they did offer a guy named John Carlos Reyes. He plays for a team in Georgia, actually. Not really one of Penn State's, perceived pipelines at the moment, but he and his high school teammate, Chantrez Davis, are apparently being looked at by Penn State. I don't know how serious the interest is both ways, but Reyes is a 6'9", 6'10", forward. So maybe Pat Chambers looking towards the depth for next year's team a little bit in the front line. Other than that, not too much imminent on the 2015 class.
Cross the fingers, hope John Carlos Reyes comes in. Pat's able to confrontation someone to open up a spot for Chantrez Davis, I suppose. He looks like a big man with some good size who can get some work done, and that's exactly what I want. But
the thing is, we're not losing anybody in the front court other than Ross Travis this year. So they're kind of set for the front court. Mike Watkins coming in, and Davis and Gulis can play the three and maybe the four a little bit. People looks up in a small ball situation. So I would expect some moving on guards, if anything. They have some options in JUCO perhaps this summer. They might look for another scorer because coming in, Josh Reeves doesn't really get his own shot. He'll get points, but he's not, a go-to guy on offense, I don't think, at this point in his career. Watkins' offensive game is a little unrefined, if that, right now. But maybe they'll look for a scorer if they don't think someone can handle the whole load himself next year. So just something to keep an eye on for the 2015 scholarship that's left.
Yeah. You still got that one that's looking kind of lonely right now there, and you never know. Weirder things have happened than Pat Chambers sending out to James Franklin. We are better signals. Hopefully soon. So that's it basically for this episode of the podcast. Tim, do you have any final thoughts before we hop off here?
Well, I just noticed on my Twitter feed, Sports Illustrated had a article about how the Warriors are created a life-size Manute Bol bobblehead.
Yeah,
all
you see that?
7 of them. That's pretty impressive.
Awesome.
I guess they're giving out, regular bobbleheads to the first 10,000 fans, which makes me insanely jealous of everyone who lives out in the Bay Area right now. Because I would love one of those, too.
Yeah, I mean, if the Warriors are maybe the best team in the NBA right now, so you should probably fly out there just to see that, but then to get him a new full bobblehead. That's awesome. how much time and effort do you think has to go into making a 7'7" bobblehead? And how much do you think the head weighs on that thing?
69 pounds.
Nice.
Yeah, 69
pounds. God, we all have college degrees. Chad, from you, any final thoughts before we roll out this week?
Just enjoy watching basketball. How about that? Let's have fun and watch Penn State. Let's try that for once and watch it blow up in our face.
And if enjoying Penn State isn't your thing because that doesn't usually happen, pick another team. Like Iowa State's on my television right now. They're fun. They're a lot of fun. Get some enjoyment out of watching Iowa State. And then I kind of regret that because one of our commenters is now going to say we should get Fred Hoiberg, and that's never going to happen.
It's already been said, Bill. Don't worry about it.
It is, yeah. Oh, I can't believe Fred Hoiberg wouldn't leave his alma mater, where he's the most popular guy in the world, to come to Penn State. My God.
Oh, I love those.
Those
are great.
Use some logic on here, people. So that's it. That's it for this episode of the pod. As always, thank you very much for joining us. Please continue to support Black Sheep Diaries, our podcast, all the stuff we're writing. Eric did some coke, and he has another one of his 5,000-word Penn State basketball manifestos coming out sometime this week. It may be up by the time this posts. I'm not 100% sure. Support the team, get out, go to games, do all that. And let's try and do what Chad says, and let's try and have some fun watching the Nittany Lions. For Tim Aiden, Chad Markulis, I'm Bill DeFilippo. As always, thanks for joining us, everyone.